it's not been a bad year for good news stories in horse racing. Apologies. Hello, Cornelius here, Cornelius Lysett on the Cornelius Cast. Hope you're well. Yeah, just thinking it's been quite a year for good news stories for racing. Quite a year for bad news stories as well, to be fair. But let's concentrate on the positives in this negative world. And no story has been better, I don't think, than when a 50-1 shot, The Game Is On, ridden by Dr. Guy Mitchell, won the Gay Kindersley Amateur Jockeys Handicap Division 1 at Goodwood on the August bank holiday weekend. Not only was it Guy Mitchell's first success on a racecourse where he's part of the medical team, but since treatment for a tumour behind his right eye forced it to be removed when he was a child, he was becoming the first person with one eye to win a horse race in Britain under rules. It took a bit of time to get a licence, but he's got it and he's ridden this winner and he's with us now. And the first thing to say is congratulations. That was fantastic.
It really was. Thank you very much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
It really struck me how much pleasure it gave you to achieve this, to win a horse race.
Oh, it really did. I mean, it still hasn't quite sunk in. At the time, I was just in utter disbelief that I'd hit the front for starters, and then he maintained it to the line. And very sportingly, the first thing I heard was Serena congratulating me. So it was really nice. Mm. Yeah, really nice.
And it was what, your fourth ride in a race?
Fourth ride.
Yeah. And I was really struck watching you on television afterwards by two quotes from you, Guy. I nearly fell off at the start was one, and everything went silent was another.
Yes.
So, as they say in grown-up sports programmes, talk us through it.
Yes. So, got down to the start pretty much last. That was because he's quite a strong horse. He's a big horse. And I just didn't want him to be around the others too much because certainly at home when I've ridden him, he has been very strong when he's cantering behind other horses on the gallops at home and things. When he's in front, he settles a bit and that's fine. But that was my number one aim, to get down there. And when I did get down there, it all seemed to be in quite a rush. Obviously, I think we might have been a little bit late. And as soon as I got there, I was picked up by my handler and on went the blind.
Blindfold.
I didn't know he was going to have a blindfold. The last time I had anything to do with a horse in a blindfold was in the racing school. I practiced it with Richard Perham up at Newmarket. But we're talking probably nearly 2 years ago now. So it was fine. He went into the stalls perfectly well. At the usual process, you wait for the last one to go in. And just as the last one goes in, they say blinds off. And you pull it off and chuck it over your head so it gets out the way. And I did that, except simultaneously, the gates opened. So I had one hand on the reins and one hand sort of behind me. So as I came out, I was sort of out the side door and I could hear Jeff is like the lead stalls handler. And I can't repeat on here what he said, but he just said something like, oh my God, King something, Doc.
Hold on tight, Doc.
Because I was hanging out the side door. I was hanging out the side door. Which made me look, as I jumped out, if you watch the replay, I'm pulling back. I didn't mean to do that, but I was completely unbalanced and it was properly amateurish of me, to be honest, but I will learn from it, definitely.
And how long did it take you to sort of regain your balance?
Second or so. And as it was, that didn't go quite right, but immediately get it out your mind. Focus on where your position is in that race and focus on getting on with the job. You could have reacted completely differently and gone, oh my God, I've been left. I've got to do something about it right now. But instead you just say, right, that's done. Can't do anything about it. Make sure you're in the right place or in the best place you can be as a result of it and don't panic. And thankfully that's what happened. I ended up following Gary's horse in front, the grey, who went along nicely. I can't remember what it was called.
Storming In, was it? Trained by Gary Moore?
Yeah, that's the one. And they were setting the pace up front. They went along okay. I mean, I know the overall race time was slower because of the conditions, but they weren't hanging around.
So it was very wet, wasn't it? Or had been very wet.
It was sticky, yeah. It had been very wet. It had rained an awful lot in the preceding days. The ground was drying for sure, but it was still claggy and quite testing. And you could see, you know, in all the races, a lot of the horses were finishing tired and the race times were all significantly slower.
I love it. I love the terminology here. So we've had claggy, we've had sticky. You said it was amateurish at the start. You're sounding like a real pro.
Yeah. Oh, I was very amateurish at the start, yeah. And I have to hold my hand up to that.
What about when you said everything went silent, which was, pretty late on in the race?
Yes. We came round into the straight around 4 furlongs, saw that they'd quickened down the hill as they usually do at Goodwood, and I felt I had to start making a move with him to get him into a better position. So I pulled him out to the left-hand side. Having spoken with some of the guys, the professionals before the race, like Tommy Marcond, he just said, yeah, stick to the middle, because that's where the better ground has been. So we did, pulled him out up the outside, and much to my surprise, he started picking up, and we started passing horses. And obviously when you're doing that, you can hear it. You can hear the crack of the whip. You can hear them shouting at them. You can hear the galloping. And gradually we went past them one by one. I was like, how on earth is this happening? And then suddenly it did go quiet. It's just like I was out in front. It was almost like I was floating. I'm not going to look around. I don't look around. I'm just going to keep pushing as hard as I can and get this horse to the line. And that silence was only really broken by me hearing Serena coming up on my right-hand side, although she didn't really get any closer than about a length or so, which was much to my relief. But yeah, the silence was odd. It was very odd, but clearly I'd hit the front, which was totally unexpected.
And well, at 50 to 1. And it must, because no crowds, no proper crowds at Goodwood at the moment. So only a few hundred people, well, barely that, a few dozen people probably there. And that's a great big space at Goodwood, isn't it, with the rolling down. So actually everything going quiet, the word surreal must come pretty readily to mind.
Yeah, absolutely. As I went over the line, all my sister and my wife were quite near the line, and I could hear them shrieking in disbelief. That was all I heard once. But my focus was head down, drive him out, and that was it. That was all I really could hear, nothing else. I was just absolutely focused.
And so you've done it. It's only your fourth ride. You've had to work for 30 years to on and off to get your license because of the one eye situation. Try and put into words what it felt like to, because it feels to me on your behalf like a massive, massive moment.
It is a huge moment. I mean, obviously this is our microcosm of racing, and there's some very big issues going on in the real world, but just for a day or so, it's the best thing ever. Yeah, I've worked hard. I had the disappointment of not getting my license a long time ago. And I like to think that, you know, had I got it then, I probably wouldn't be doing it now. But then again, if you look at Simon Walker, he's still going and he's doing really well. So, you know, I've kept at it. I've worked hard. I've definitely worked on my fitness. When I did my Category A course at the racing school to qualify to ride.
That's a type of license.
It's a type of license, yeah. And they set the bar at about 65% for amateur jockeys. And personally, I don't think that's good enough.
So when you say set the bar 65% in terms of passing?
Of the achieving fitness levels at 65% of the max. So for instance, I think as an example, one of them is you have to do a plank for up to 4 minutes. So obviously if you get 4 minutes, you've got 100% and it works backwards from there. At the time they had a bleep test, and if you reach level 13 or something, you get 100%. So top jocks, professional jocks, have to get 90% in their tests.
An amateur 65. And what about you? Because obviously
I got 80% at my time, my course, but now I would hope to get 90 plus. That's what I work on, maintaining my fitness wise.
And just in terms of fitness, that's physical fitness. What about just the eye situation? Did you have to I think you described it in something I heard as having to undergo something a bit like an advanced driving test.
Yes, that was my pre-course assessment with Richard Perham. So I had to go up to Newmarket on my own and
basically go
on the Equisizer. And he ran a video of different races and we were working out spatial awareness. And I had to sort of talk myself through a ride for him. And then we did a few other things. Also had a really thorough eye examination and eye testing, peripheral field, visual field type stuff with a consultant up in Harley Street. And all that package together enabled me to then do the proper Category A amateurs course, which then got me to doing the license.
And the other aspect of this story, as well as being brilliant, the game is on, 50 to 1 wins, it's only your fourth ride, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Your sister's screaming, your wife's screaming, everyone's excited. And it's actually Goodwood is one of the three racecourses in which you normally have a stethoscope round your neck,
right,
and looking after the jockeys.
Yes, that's right.
So how good did that feel?
It was super. It was really, really good. I mean, I love Goodwood. It's a great track. Always wanted to ride there. And the medical team were well behind me, all the paramedics, all the docs. And it's been really good, actually, because they've all been taking photos at different stages of it. So I've got pictures in the ring. I've got pictures at the start. Everyone's just been, you know, so supportive, so happy. And it's been absolutely brilliant.
And you mentioned Tom Marquand, you took some bit of advice. What of the jockeys, who obviously you deal with very closely a lot, whether they've got to pass the doctor or got to be seen after a fall or whatever? What's their reaction been?
At the time, most of them had gone because they, you know, there were two amateur races at the end of the day. So I mean, leading up to it, they're just saying, you know, good luck. And as Tom said, take the middle road up there because that's where the better ground is. I've had quite a few congratulations through social media platforms and things from various different jockeys, which is great. I'm still disbelief. Yeah,
I think I can detect that in your voice. That you talked about it being a long old journey to actually get the license. Mitchells are racing folk, aren't they? Because your half brothers are jockeys or have been jockeys. In Freddie's case, your dad was a trainer and a successful jockey. I remember your grandfather Cyril,
yes,
as a jockey but as a trainer. Training, I think he trained a TiVo, didn't he, for Sir Peter O'Sullivan?
Yeah, a TiVo and Be Friendly
for Sir Peter. And gives an opportunity in just 10 seconds to tell the great story about when a TiVo won the Triumph Hurdle at Cheltenham, commentated upon by Sir Peter O'Sullivan. He was just Mr. Peter O'Sullivan in those days, and he was able to say, "The winner is a TiVo owned by Mr. Peter O'Sullivan." His voice never flickered. Trained by Cyril Mitchell and ridden by Robert Hughes.
Robert Hughes,
in 1970-something. So you're a racing person. Were you on ponies from next to nothing?
Oh yeah, ponies from a really young age. Involved in pony club at eventing, all that carry on. Riding out started 8 or 9, right, and then went from there.
And without meaning to be indelicate or whatever, you had a cancer, didn't you, behind your right eye, and I you know, most of us can't imagine that if you're 6 years, well, 6 years old and you have to have your eye removed. What did that? Can you remember what you felt like at the time?
No, I mean, not really. I mean, obviously, the main treatment was when I was 3. I have visual memories of some of that. I used to have to be sedated to have the radiotherapy, and I can just picture. You know, those old-fashioned hospital trolleys with the metal sides and things, and they often have yellow wheels. I mean, and that smell of hospitals, that's ingrained in me from that. And I just remember being on it, laying down, and almost like I had taken drugs. They'd give me them. It's psychedelic. The lights of the top of the corridor just flickering by. That I can remember that. That's about it. I don't remember anything else because I was completely out of it.
And how did your parents sort of get you to get your head round something which is so fundamental? They must have had to do a big job themselves.
Well, I think I think we're very much just get on with things. You know, I would have been chucked on a pony and told to get on with it, and that's fine. In a way, when you have these type of adversities, they're probably the making of you. And yes, of course, it stopped me riding when I wanted to start riding, but here I am doing it now, and it would make me even more determined at the end of the day. I doubt my mum would necessarily agree because I think she had a torrid time.
I guess, though, you're a GP now in Pulborough, West Sussex. I guess when patients come along and something pretty awful is going to happen or whatever, then you're able to chat to them more easily.
Yeah, I think so. It does help. You know, from an understanding point of view, from an empathic point of view, you know, for me, it's something I grew up with, and it's something that most people who know me well don't even really notice, to be honest.
So you'd done the riding out, and at 16 you applied for a license, and the regulator then was the Jockey Club.
Correct. Yeah.
So we're talking 30 years ago, in the end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, and. Was it just no, or was there a bit of chat?
It it pretty much felt to me like it was a no. You know, when you're a 16-year-old boy, if you hear the words no, you tend to switch off afterwards. So there was never a formal letter of, here are the reasons we cite that you can't do it. I know, I think at the time, Michael Turner did have a dialogue with the French racing authorities, and
he was the doctor at the time.
And they said no as well. So that was pretty much it. We didn't sort of appeal it. We just left it and said, okay, well, we'll try again at another date and see what happens.
So you can only speculate on the actual specific reasons.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you can imagine they would have been worried about maybe what happens if you get kicked back in your eye and all that sort of thing. Well, I would have worn goggles anyway, but these days, you know, the goggles I wore at the weekend are thicker. They're actually, I think, for skydiving. So the jocks normally wear the slightly softer ones. I wear a hard pair. They're more rigid and shatterproof and all those sort of things. So I don't see that as a major issue. Yeah, no, it was never fully clear, but it wasn't an acceptable thing at the time.
And you applied again, I think, when you were at medical school.
Yeah, I think just before. At one point, Dad had organised a ride on a horse. Some owners of ours, David Johnson, owned a series of horses called Sylvan something, and one of them was Sylvan Barbarossa, who won at Royal Ascot, the Corkanori. This was another one who wasn't as good as Sylvan Barbarossa, who we rode in a charity race at Cheltenham in about 92. Something like that.
Right.
Let me think when I left school. Yeah, 92, which came stone last, but it was a good experience. So that was really it. And then I went to medical school and played rugby and got busy.
So why were you allowed to do that?
Well, quite. I don't know, because it was just a charity race. Yeah, actually, that's a good point. I don't know, but I did.
Because I suspect now, if you were not allowed to ride in a race for whatever reason, and it was a charity race, which technically isn't under the rules of racing, I'm sure that the same restrictions would apply.
Yeah.
So when you were turned down again, was that a more formal turn down, or was that...
No, similar thing. Right. Similar thing. It was an application and it was a no.
And now, you were on the road then to becoming Dr. Mitchell. Mm. So did it sort of slightly go out of your head?
It did a little bit. I mean, I did... maintain some contact in racing in terms of I used to do my holiday jobs working for Simon often in the yard.
Simon Dagg.
As a lad, to get some money in my pocket. And then, you know, as it gets busier at medical school and you start getting more serious in the clinical stages and you have to go do electives and things, I just didn't have the time for it. I played a lot more rugby. Then I would say I was nearly a stone and a half or so heavier than I am now.
Right.
Because I was in the gym all the time, getting myself stronger to play rugby, which I definitely wouldn't do now because they're all massive. So I wouldn't go near it now.
So do you still play rugby?
No, that's another story. I got, I fractured my orbit playing rugby. That had to stop.
Just explain what for us lay people.
So I had what they call a blowout fracture. So it was only in a training session as well. Someone passed me the ball. It was a low pass and I bent down to pick it up whilst running forward. And the people who were doing their defensive role, he dropped his shoulder and I ran onto the point of his shoulder with my eye socket, basically.
And this is your good eye?
My good eye. And it broke in, several places. Several places, yeah.
I'm almost feeling like a parent going to see a GP.
I know. I was in a lot of trouble with my mum about that.
Well, I bet.
And actually, it was around the time that my wife, now wife, had come to do an intercalated degree, so what we call a clinical degree at my medical school. It's just an additional year, and I was on that course as well. And I just sort of started seeing her when I had this accident. And I kind of remember being quite drowsy because, again, I was on some strong painkillers in the hospital. And when I woke up, she was at my bedside. So that was kind of, she's a good girl. So and here we are now.
A Florence Nightingale moment.
Exactly. Almost. Exactly. Yeah.
Is orbit, are orbits and eye sockets the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that wasn't actually going to cause you blindness in the other eye. It was just not very good.
I didn't go blind, no, but they were worried about it because of the swelling around the eye as well.
So that was the end of your rugby career, was it?
Yeah, it was. It's probably a good thing, to be honest.
But then I've been looking at the website for the doctors in Pulborough, which appears everybody does very energetic outdoor activities. But you also do triathlon, cycling. Is there some skiing there? But you've been up the same mountain three times in one day.
Yeah.
Tell us what that is called. I've got it actually here. It's called the Club de Single du Mont Ventoux, cycling three ascents of Ventoux in one day.
Yeah.
Isn't that part of the Tour de France?
Yeah, often is, yeah. Yeah, they generally do it once.
But I did it three times.
I did it three times. So I'm now a member of the Mad Men of the Windy Mountain, as it is. And I did that for the IJF. I was sponsored.
Indie Jockeys Fund.
I've always wanted to ride up it anyway. And I thought, well, might as well try this. It was a great day. I was very, very lucky with the weather. It wasn't windy at all. It was sunny, but not roasting hot. And I started at about 5 a.m. And when I got to the top of the first ascent, witnessed an absolutely beautiful sunrise. It was amazing. And then scooted down to the next village at the bottom, turn around. And you have to get a little book, and you have to get it signed off in each village so that you prove that you've gone up and down. And then you send it off, and you get this little membership card thing.
Well,
you are a definite lunatic.
Well, yeah. your words, not mine, but seem perfectly fair words. So you've done all these things like triathlon, cycling and skiing and rugby and going up and down that mountain. And then you decide to have another go for a jockey's license. Now, you've mentioned a couple of people in the various interviews post winning the race at Goodwood. One of them is Guy Disney, who was the soldier who lost part of one of his legs in on active service in Afghanistan, and he became the first amputee jockey, and other riders who've ridden despite being type 1 diabetics. Did those kind of stories inspire you on?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, you know, Guy is also an amateur jockey as well. I don't personally know him, but I've followed his story closely, and you know what he's done is wholly impressive. Those stories help. I can't really remember why I suddenly it's that itch that's never been scratched type of thing. And with Jerry coming in to the BHA, Dr. Jerry Hill taking over the reins.
He's the chief doctor now.
I didn't pounce on him the second he was newly in post. I gave him a couple of years before I jumped on him and said, look, I'm not getting any younger. I'd like to have a go. Can we have a pragmatic discussion about how we might be able to formulate a plan to show that I can do it, or I'm capable of doing it, and in a safe manner for my other fellow jockeys around me and things.
And presumably because you are a medic, so you know the risks from the non-jockey side.
Yeah.
So presumably you wouldn't have been pursuing it if you thought that you were that it was too much for you.
No, not at all. You know, and as you say, I do a lot of sport anyway, but I can honestly tell you that nothing is as hard as race riding, especially when you're an amateur.
Including going up a mountain three times in a day.
Yeah. I think Sunday wasn't too bad, but my first ride at Newbury was horrendous.
Yeah, you said you couldn't walk at the end of it.
Couldn't walk. Yeah. Jump off, legs completely buckle. And the funny thing is that when you say it to the other jockeys and things, go, oh yeah, that happened to me. They didn't tell me beforehand. But also the often thing that happens is that as a new jockey, you forget to breathe. You're pushing a horse out from 3 furlongs out and you hold your breath.
Which is not
and the valets, the valets were saying it on Sunday when we were going out, because there was another lad, I think it was Henry Main, and one of the valets was saying to him, don't hold your breath. And it's the same every time we go out, we go, breathe, because it helps.
And valets, just just to be clear, are not people who are carrying their suitcases to the races, but those guys who look after the riders in the changing room. So what does that tell you then about the fit? You know, if you're Luke Morris or Oisin Murphy or your brother Jack Mitchell, who's having an absolutely fantastic season, as we sit here, 65 winners so far, how fit then do they have to be? Because they're doing it 6-7 times a day.
I think that's the point. They are extremely fit for starters, but they're conditioned because they're doing it so regularly. And the difficulty comes when, like me, you know, I'm pretty much a Corinthian at this sport because it's not my day job. I ride out once a week or so for George Baker, or I've ridden out for Amanda or Simon Dow.
Amanda Perrett must be a near neighbour of the GP surgery.
She very close, just around the corner. I try and maintain my fitness, but it's difficult when you're not riding regularly. And even Sunday, I mean, yes, I was a bit nervous. It does funny things to your body. So I've been riding out. My leg strength is really good, but cantering down to the start, my legs felt like jelly. Really? And I was pushing him from 3.5, 4 out. So by the time I hit the half furlong to go, I was gasping for breath and just driving as much as I could. And, you know, my personal note on that is I must do better. I must get fitter. I must try harder. And I will for the next time. But, you know, my last ride was last November. So it's pretty difficult to maintain that level unless you're doing it all the time. And there are becoming more amateur races, but the difficulty is getting into them, you know, because often yards have their own amateurs and there aren't many spare rides unless you're someone like Simon Walker or James Harding, who's, you know, they're well established, these guys. So that's where I've got to sort of aim for. Hoping riding a winner might help it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And you talked about going to see Dr. Jerry Hill, BHA doctor. So you made your point. I think I'd really like to have a go at it. You said, you know, I'm not getting any younger. I'd like to have a go. What was the initial reaction? Let's sit down and talk. Or was the initial reaction, ooh, I'm not sure?
No, definitely not the latter. Definitely not the latter. You know, right. Jerry was very welcoming of it. And obviously he didn't go, oh, yeah, of course. He said, no, we have to go through a due process and we'll make an informed decision at the end of it. And thankfully it was successful.
And that due process, was that long and hard, or how did that all
work?
It
was just, it was really, as I said, it was going and having making a formal eye test with the specialist, making sure that was all above board. And then going and doing the assessment with Richard Perham, and also being backed by my trainers. So, you know, Amanda and Mark Perrett really looked after me. They gave me my first ride. They wrote supportive letters in my application, as did Simon and Luke Dace and people like that. So the whole package together helped me achieve the goal.
And I know Guy Disney says he has this part of one of his legs is prosthetic. He hardly sort of notices during a race. So this doesn't mean to sound trite, because obviously you do have a blind spot, but do you really notice? Or an extra big blind spot, I should say.
I do have an extra big blind spot, but, you know, it's no different from me driving on the motorway. And it's always a case of mirror signal maneuver. And in a race, obviously that happens at high speed and quite quickly around you, things can change differently. So, you know, I was lucky. I was drawn one on Sunday, so I was on the rail anyway. No one's coming up my inner. I had a good field of vision. When I've ridden other places, been drawn wider, I'm very mindful that I'm looking regularly on my inner, so I'm not cutting anyone up or I'm not causing any problems. Yeah, I would say it's similar to driving on the motorway, really. Same thing.
And when you got the license, and when, I think it was first ride at Newbury, is that?
Yes. Yeah.
And there you were, you're in the paddock, you're getting the leg up, the family are cheering you on, etc. And bearing in mind, you know, it was effectively 30 yeah, years to get to that position. Yeah. I cannot imagine. It almost feels to me like the plot of a movie, you know, that you must have wanted to sort of, I've done it.
It was a great day. It was so hot. I would say, you know, as with all of these things, it was a good learning experience for me. I rode too short.
Well, the stirrups were too short, so your balance was challenged.
Yeah, they were too short. I had ridden at that length before, but I hadn't really taken into consideration what the effects of the heat that day, the emotion of it all, the adrenaline and everything. And yeah, I pretty much say my race had almost been ridden by the time I got that horse to the start. He had blinkers on. He towed me down to the start. I was knackered by the time I was walking around, and that nervous energy and excitement just burnt, you know, through my glucose stores. So, you know, that was tiring.
Where did you finish?
Oh yeah, last.
But then in a way that's part of the movie script, isn't it? You know, that yeah,
Yeah.
if you'd gone and won, it would have been first time out, wouldn't it have been all a bit too straightforward?
Yeah, it would have been too straightforward. I mean, to be fair to the horse, it wasn't probably the right race for him, but they, you know, luckily I was supported to ride in it, and we have to get going somewhere. He finished all right, and he, you know, he probably thought I didn't have much of a race there, but that's because the jockey was completely
Well,
exhausted.
you progress from there, and so you've also ridden at Windsor, where you also officiate. You've got an
Yes.
ambition to ride at Ascot, where you also officiate
Yes,
as a
yeah.
doctor. And your dad was practically—I can't remember how many times your dad won the race at Epsom, which they call the Amateur Jockeys Derby over the Derby distance, usually about this time of the year.
Yeah.
Your dad won it two, three, four times.
At least, I think.
Yeah,
Yeah, at least.
so I'm guessing that might be an ambition for a Mitchell.
It is definitely an ambition of mine. I've been lucky enough growing up to ride around the track, working the horses during exercise,
Round Epsom.
round Epsom, and I think on one or two occasions actually allowed to ride all the way around.
Round Tattenham Corner.
Yeah,
That
it was
must be
quite
quite an
something. It
experience.
is quite something. There's a real camber on there. So I've been it, but I mean, we're talking again, that would have been 25 years ago, or when I was sort of in my early teens, probably, so even longer. So yes, that's definitely one on the bucket list. I mean, yes, it's clearly it's not the race that it used to be when you have horses like I think Dad rode Sea Pigeon or something in it one year,
Did
something
he?
crazy like that, and it obviously worth more money and more kudos, but still
But
something
it's
I'd
the
love to
Derby
do. I know
course.
you exactly. You can't get away from the fact it's on the Derby course, and I grew up right next to it, and I've always wanted to ride it in, you know, in real time in a proper race. So that will be a huge ambition ticked off if we can get there. And that horse we rode on Sunday might actually get around that track, so we never know.
Really, the game is on Trained by Simon Dow in Epsom,
Yeah.
isn't it? So wouldn't have to go very far.
No.
No, how good would that be? Final thought, Guy. And I know Guy Disney, by winning the steeplechases that he's won at Sandown,
Yes.
has, and you don't want to get too sort of pompous about this, but has become a real sort of inspiration to people who've lost limbs in his case. Are you ready to be an inspiration to people who've lost eyes in some cases?
I'm very happy. Yeah, very happy to help people or give them advice and things. The thing is, I don't really think much about having one eye. It's been with me for so long. It's just part of the fabric, part of who I am. And I've never really let it stop me doing anything. I'd sometimes think it's more remarkable that I'm age 46 and doing it in the first place. That's, you know, I went for a run this morning and I felt every one of my 46 years. Yeah, after that ride, just was feeling quite stiff. So that's also quite an achievement, I think.
But you've had quite a lot of coverage, and there will be people watching who, and we all know that whatever walk of life, people are inspirations. So I think people will have watched your story and will have heard about your story, and they'll be really, will be spurred on.
I think that's great. And I'm very happy to be in that position, and certainly hope I can do it again.
Well, and the horse couldn't really have a better name. The game is on.
Oh,
The
yeah.
game is certainly on for Dr. Guy Mitchell, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. And I mean, also, he's owned by a whole group of friends of ours, so it's a great day. It's an absolutely great day.
Well, we'll be looking out for you at Ascot in the not too distant future, and at Epsom in that Amateur Jockeys Derby, perhaps in the future. Thanks so much for telling your story. It's been a lovely story to have seen happen for British horse racing, and one that I hope that we'll be able to follow more and more in the future. And thank you to you for listening. Please subscribe if you get a chance, then you'll never miss an episode. Please tell your friends about the Cornelius Cast. We're here most weeks, and I look forward to chatting again very soon.